Good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Cremery. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game announced this month that fishing for yellow-eye is again prohibited in Southeast Alaska this year. The yellow-eye are a popular species of rockfish, but their populations dropped in recent years, which has fish and game biologists concerned. As KRBD's Jack Darrell reports, tight fishing regulations could be helping yellow-eye, but it would be a long time before we know for sure.
There are seven species of demersal shelf rockfish lurking in the depths of Southeast Alaska. Quillback, China, copper, canary, rosethorn, tiger rockfish, and yellow-eye. According to Fish and Game, all of them have experienced population decline in recent years. But among all of them, yellow-eye is the most common and the most sought after. The Fish and Game announcement earlier this month isn't a change. The commercial fishery in southern Southeast Alaska for demersal shelf rockfish closed in 2020. The fishery in the northern part of the region shuttered in 1995. In the intervening years, the Board of Fish has added restrictions to sport and recreational fishers as well. All DSR species are still fair game for Southeast subsistence fishers. Non-residents fishing in any capacity are banned from retaining any demersal shelf rockfish. New harvest regulations are looser than in previous years. In 2021, retaining any DSR was illegal for recreational fishermen. This year, Ketchikan residents can take home up to three rockfish, as long as none of them are yellow eyes. Chris Baldwin has run a charter fishing boat for over a decade. He says he supports the continued closure.
So we support regulations. If Fish and Game thinks that they're declining, they need to be protected.
Baldwin says it's not rare, though, for the big orange fish to end up as bycatch for a halibut or lingcod angler.
And so it also presents a challenge when you get those big yellow eyes to descend them, because we're required to descend them if we don't want to retain them or if we can't retain them.
Rockfish live their whole lives near the seafloor. Baldwin says when they are yanked to the surface by a fishing line, the nitrogen in their body expands, making them buoyant. This greatly reduces their chance of returning to deep water or surviving the encounter. That's why the Board of Fish required all sport and charter fishermen to have a descending device on board.
It hits a certain pressure and just opens up, so you clamp it around the mouth. I hook it to my downrigger and drop it down, and then it releases the fish.
Yellow eye, so named for their prominent yellow eyes, make their homes among the rocks deep below the surface. With their spiny dorsal fin, bright orange, yellow, and red coloring, they sort of resemble an underwater fireball. They're a popular catch among sport fishermen because of their look, size, and according to Baldwin, they put up a good fight.
They definitely fight differently than other types of rockfish.
They are also one of the longest living fish species in the world, sometimes surviving to be well over 100 years old, until their Southeast Alaska populations went in a freefall. Alex McCarroll is a biologist with Fish and Game. She says that since yellow-eye often live for so long, they grow slowly and mature late, meaning that fishing them on a season-by-season basis can have a major effect on the health of the population. This also means getting the fish back to a healthy level may take longer than other overfished species.
So we don't know for sure, but it could be a combination of environmental factors, like the blob that happened in the North Pacific, as well as fishing pressures and their life history characteristics. Yellow-eye rockfish are particularly vulnerable because they're long-lived species.
The blob was a marine heat wave that occurred in the 2010s, a mass of warm water in the North Pacific Ocean that persisted for nearly 3 years and had a pronounced negative effect on sea creatures like rockfish. Rhea Ayersman leads ADF&G's groundfish monitoring efforts in Southeast. She says they measure demersal shelf rockfish with remotely operated vehicles on the seafloor, as well as data from bycatch in the commercial halibut fishery.
So that's how we survey yellow-eye rockfish to come up with a density estimate, which gets expanded out to biomass estimate. So we're doing these surveys that are feeding into stock assessments.
Just before the 2020 fishery closure, Fish and Game report a 60% decline in yellow-eye biomass since the mid-90s. Fish and Game says they will continue monitoring the species with hopes for reopening the fishery in the future. Until then, fishermen will have to continue to descend them back to the deep. In Ketchikan, I'm Jack Darrell.
Since October of last year, Anchorage has been visited by a rare feathered celebrity, a white raven who appears to have taken up residence in a neighborhood known as Spinard. Last summer, the raven was spotted south of Anchorage in the Kenai Peninsula, where biologists confirmed the bird is not an albino, but leucistic, which means it has a gene that causes a loss of pigmentation. It also has blue eyes. Some, like KNBA's Rhonda McBride, have followed the bird vicariously from a Facebook page called Anchorage White Raven Spottings.
Just about every day on the page, you can find new photos of White Raven aloft with its feathers translucent in the light, at play with another raven in the snow, or up to some kind of mischief, like the video in which it unscrews a bolt from a street lamp, or in another video where it preaches to the choir.
It's just so different.
Glenn Klinkhart is a retired police detective who has almost made tracking White Raven a full-time job.
We all know what a raven looks like. We all know the shape, how it's supposed to look. And then when you see this White Raven with this genetic difference, just kind of stops you.
Scientists say the White Raven is very rare, but how rare? Rick Sinnott, a wildlife biologist, says he knows of only two other White Raven sightings in Anchorage. The last one was 20 years ago.
It wasn't as white as this one. It was kind of a bronze color. It was very beautiful.
Sinnott says another White Raven was spotted 20 years before that and believes three sightings over the course of four decades meets the definition of rare, especially when you consider the genetic odds. Initially, Sinnott worried that other ravens would pick on the White Raven.
When it's around other ravens, it doesn't seem to raise the feathers on the top of his head that would suggest that it was subordinate.
In fact, Raven seems more like an alpha bird. In a recent post, Glenn Klinkhart shared pictures of White Raven in a spat with four black ravens over a discarded Häagen-Dazs carton of white raspberry chocolate truffle ice cream. And in the final photo, Raven prances around with its prize. It's one of more than 10,000 photos Klinkhart has snapped of White Raven since October. But there's one he's very proud of, taken on a day in which he found the bird completely alone. He laid down on the snow to watch with camera in hand.
That White Raven came about 2 feet from me and looked in my camera lens and then tilted its head and then said, okay, and then it wobbled off.
Klinkhart says he was so close, the photo showed his reflection in the bird's blue eye. A magical moment. And in many Alaska Native stories, the bird is a mystical being. Mita DeWitt, a Thlinkit healer who works with medicinal plants, says she first heard about White Raven years ago from another traditional healer, the late Rita Blumenstein, a Yupik from Southwest Alaska, known as Grandma Rita.
She would say, we will see a White Raven, and that's when we'll know that humanity as a whole is shifting towards one of peace.
DeWitt says it's a prophecy Grandma Rita heard from her elders, an example of the White Raven's long history as a messenger bird. Even the Greek god Apollo had one that turned from white to black after displeasing the god. And in Alaska Native stories, Raven also transforms. DeWitt says not to forget that Raven is a trickster. Her uncle tells a story about how Raven wanted to bring mankind fresh water to drink, so it tried to steal a bucket from a chief's house. Soot blackened his feathers as he escaped through a smoke hole. And in another version of that story, Raven turns black after he steals the sun, the moon, and the stars to bring light into the world. DeWitt believes Raven has transformed yet again and has returned to encourage mankind to save the planet.
It gives me a profound sense of hope, and even beyond hope.
Some Facebook followers have speculated about whether White Raven is male or female. Rick Sinnott says it's hard to tell, but during courtship, he's seen males fly up in the air, drop sticks, then swoop down to catch them.
When males are trying to impress females, they go into quite a frenzy of that kind of behavior.
Sinnott says the mating season begins at the end of January and runs through March. But chances are, White Raven will move on come spring and head into the wilderness. But for now, the bird brings warmth and cheer into the heart of an Anchorage winter. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Cremery. A third January storm could dump even more snow on Juneau and the northern panhandle starting tonight. Between 9 and 14 inches of snow could fall by tomorrow afternoon. The snow will also come with strong winds, with gusts up to 40 miles an hour. The National Weather Service has issued a winter storm warning for Juneau, Haines, Skagway, and Kluckwan, effective through tomorrow afternoon. Meteorologist Brian Besnick says the heaviest snowfall will likely happen before midnight tonight. This is KTOO.